This is Radio Kate here at the Qatar Foundation for the World Conference of Science Journalists. It's absolutely baking outside and we've just come from the digital storytelling session. And I was speaking on the panel and just as we came off stage, somebody came to see me. Who are you?
Yeah, hi, I'm Kirsten and I just attended the panel. I came late, but I found it incredibly interesting because I work for an organization that uses all the different kinds of media to get its story across, and in particular I work for the, now it's a long name so brace yourself, Comprehensive Nuclear Test Bed Treaty Organization in Vienna.
What does that mean?
Yeah, in short, that's a very long word. In short, the abbreviation is CDBTO.
And that, even the abbreviation's long.
And it's not even all the words in there. What that means is we are looking after the ban on nuclear testing. So there is a treaty that was adopted in 1996 that bans all nuclear explosions worldwide, anywhere, by anybody, at any time. The organization I work for looks after getting this treaty into force, looks after the implementation of the treaty, and builds a worldwide monitoring system. And that monitoring system is very technical, very scientific, and that's why we connect also to science and technology and are always interested in new developments in all sorts of fields.
So when you go to work on a daily basis, what are you actually doing in your job?
Well, I'm in the public affairs office, so I try to explain exactly that. What do we do? And I have started a bit on that. And the very interesting part of that, what people are usually really amazed about, is the system that we are building, that we are able to literally hear a nuclear explosion no matter where it takes place. We have for that we have monitoring stations all over. We can listen to sound in the ground, that's seismic waves. We can listen to sounds in the water, which is an incredible technology. You need only 11 stations to cover all the oceans. And we also listen to sound in the air, but not the normal sound we can hear, but the sound that is very low frequencies or below our hearing. Yeah, sounds that, for instance, whales make in the water is very low frequency, or some explosions also, I mean, have low frequency sound in the air that we can also hear, or from volcanoes. And then we also sniff with the number of stations, we sniff in the air for trace evidence of nuclear explosions. And while the mandate is, of course, to make sure that no nuclear explosion goes undetected, all these technologies are so good that they can be used for other things as well. So we are active in a way in a tsunami warning. We contribute data to tsunami warning centers in the Asia Pacific area, and we have also been crucial in a way in helping tracking the dispersion of the cloud from Fukushima, the radioactive cloud from Fukushima. So our stations pick that up as well.
So you were mentioning earlier about the seismic vibrations. I mean, how can you tell the difference between an earthquake or a nuclear bomb?
That's a very good question, and that takes you right to the science. When you register an event, we have computer programs that start analyzing the information immediately, and there are various characteristic properties in a seismic wave by which you can tell which one is a natural event, like an earthquake, and which one is an explosion. With an explosion, you know that. I mean, you have a release of energy at a very short time. You know, there is no buildup. Like often with an earthquake, you have a buildup. Yeah. But with an explosion, you have an energy release that is very momentarily, I mean, very punctual, on the point. Yeah. So, and that you can see. Yeah. And then you have already the distinction between, like, what's a natural, what's a man-made event. And then the next question would be, is it nuclear? And then you need to look for the waste of a nuclear explosion.
So and that's when the air testing comes in.
Yeah, and we've done that actually in 2006 with the nuclear explosion in North Korea, and we found that, we detected that very quickly. We have been able to see this straight away, and we've predicted with an atmospheric transport modeling where any possible release of radionuclear waste would go. And 12 days later, our prediction was confirmed by a pickup in North Canada, 7,500 kilometers away. And our station picked that up. It's a very high sensitivity these stations have, so it needs really only minute amounts to really find that out, yeah.
And what's the process? If you do discover that there's been a nuclear explosion, I mean, do you keep that information secret, and or do you share that with governments first, or does that just go immediately public?
No, it doesn't go public. It goes to the governments. That's what our obligation is. I mean, we have to share all the data that we have with our member states, 182, so they all have the opportunity to get all this information, and they then are the political decision makers. We prepare this process with our information, and all of them get it in the same way, so it's very democratic. Yeah, all of them get the same information, and based on that, they then can decide what they want to do. Like in 2006, for instance, they brought it to the UN Security Council. And that is an option that they can do, of course, you know, resulting in the adoption of resolutions, sanctions, and so forth. So there is the political angle, but it is prepared in a technical way. Yeah.
Sounds like fascinating stuff. Is there a website or anything that people can visit?
Yeah, there is a website, www.ctbto.org.
That's ctbto.org. There we go, I remembered it. Well, thank you very much. Let's go and get some lunch.
Yes.